Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week's guest is Minnesota Republican Congressman Brad Finstad, who joins us to discuss potential Trump-Vance administration agriculture priorities and a farm bill outlook. But first, here's this week's headlines. USDA is projecting record high corn and soybean yields this year. Soybean yields are expected to average more than 53 bushels an acre, which is an increase of nearly 3 bushels from last year. Corn yields are expected to average about 183 bushels per acre, which is up nearly 6 bushels from last year. The department also estimated farmers would produce more than 4.5 billion bushels of soybeans this year and more than 15 billion bushels of corn. Grocery prices are up slightly for the second straight month. Higher prices for eggs, milk, beef, and fresh produce offset lower prices for pork, dairy products, and cereals and bakery products. Egg prices rose 5.5% last month due to the recent bird flu outbreaks. Beef prices rose by more than 1% due to tight cattle supplies. And finally, the California Air Resources Board could end up limiting the amount of renewable diesel made from soybean or canola oil that would qualify for the state's low carbon fuel standard. Under new proposals, companies would be eligible for low carbon fuel standard credits on only 20% of their biomass-based diesel that comes from soybean or canola oil. According to the American Soybean Association, biofuel from soybean and canola oil accounted for 30% of renewable diesel that qualified for credits in the first quarter of this year. The board will hear comments on the proposals through August 27th. Representative Brad Finstad is a Republican representing Minnesota's 1st Congressional District and is a member of the House Agriculture Committee. He won the primary election this week and says rural voters in his district are concerned about inflation and grocery prices.
You know, I think it just comes down to simple family pocketbook issues. You know, everywhere I go in southern Minnesota, I'm hearing the same things that, you know, our wallets are getting squeezed, whether it's at the gas pump, whether it's inflation, interest rates, input costs that have just crippled us right now. And then you look at the price of food, you look at eggs, milk, bread, everything is up 20 to 45% and families are feeling it. And so as we see, you know, even some job providers giving 3 to 5% raises for their employees, that doesn't keep up with the pressure and the inputs all around us. And so people are just, you know, uneasy about the economics. And then moreover, in our deeper rural communities, you know, those that are just really strong egg producing communities, we're struggling right now. When you look at the, again, the input costs, and then on top of that, when you have $4 corn and sub-$10 beans, it's tough to make the math work to figure out how we even get close to breaking even this year. So that's the worry that people have on their minds right now.
Minnesota's 1st District has been in the news a lot lately since Tim Walz served 5 terms as congressman there earlier in his career. Why do you think he was able to win re-election in your district so many times before he ran for governor?
Well, the Tim Walz that we see today is not even close to the Tim Walz that he presented himself to us in southern Minnesota years ago. You know, Tim was known to wear a camouflage hat when he would come around the district. And I think he was just camouflaging his true liberal tendencies. And, you know, this is a governor who, as congressman, was endorsed by the NRA, was endorsed by farm groups. Fast forward just a couple years when he becomes governor, and he is one of the most liberal governors in the country, if not the most liberal governor. You know, doing things to erode our Second Amendment rights, doing things to, you know, make the combustible engine extinct, which would cripple and annihilate the renewable fuels industry, putting more regulations on our farmers. So he's not even recognizable today to what he was when he presented himself to us as our congressman.
Looking to the general election, where do you think a Trump-Vance administration could make the most difference in the agriculture policy space?
Well, first and foremost, I mean, I think the one thing that that President Trump likes to do, and he likes to make deals. And we right now in the ag community, we need deals. We need trade. We have seen this administration, the Harris-Biden administration, fail farmers over and over again. We're on a year 2, going on year 3 of an ag trade deficit in our country, over $30 billion. You know, and think of that. As a farm kid, when I was growing up, my mom and dad always had taught me that, you know, we have this most honorable, noble profession where we're asked to feed and fuel our neighbors, our state, our country, and the world. And right now, we are in a position where we're importing more egg products than we are exporting. And that we feel that then at the market, right? So that's why we have $4 corn, and that's why we have under $10 beans. We need new trade deals. We need new partners to take interest in our egg products. And I know President Trump, he's a lot of things, but he's a businessman, and he will help agriculture expand our markets.
We'll be right back with more from Congressman Brad Finstad right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. The biofuels industry strongly opposed small refinery exemptions from the first Trump administration. We asked Congressman Finstad how a second administration would be different on biofuel policy.
We in the ag sector have to get away from this position that we've been in for far too long, and that's we're always on defense. We're always on defense and trying to defend things that are happening to us, and we have to go on offense. So I think a new administration offers us the opportunity to go on offense and talk about the prosperity that biofuels creates, to show that what we do right here, when we talk about America First energy proposals and plans, that starts right in our corn and bean fields in southern Minnesota. And that's the message that, you know, I'm going to deliver to the president. I am delivering to make sure that we understand that we need to, again, expand and create more opportunities, you know, get rid of the EPA deciding our E15 fate. This is E15 year round. Let's make sure that we have that product available at the pump for consumers. Consumers are deciding they want it, and that creates more volume and opportunity and a better price for us on the farm.
There was a lot of optimism among Republicans during the Republican National Convention about winning the presidency and both houses of Congress. What would that mean for agriculture and, in particular, passing a farm bill?
92% of all planted acres in our country is represented right now by a Republican in Congress. 92%. So it will be an issue that we take very serious, that we do take very serious. I mean, we're reflective of the districts that we're elected to represent. I am a fourth generation farmer of southern Minnesota. It is the highest importance for me to make sure that agriculture is protected and that we are given the tools to grow and expand. And again, be able to be in a position to pass the farm on to the fifth generation. And so what we're excited about is to be given that opportunity to, again, reduce and eliminate some of the stupid regulations, to right-size government, to make sure that an America First energy plan is focused on agriculture, create new opportunities for us. There's just a real excitement that we are, you know, our Americans are the best in the world. And it's time for us to highlight that and to really allow that to prosper and grow.
The Congressional Budget Office says the bill would increase the deficit by $33 billion. Are Republicans prepared to override the CBO score in order to pass the Ag Committee's farm bill?
Yeah, CBO, at the end of the day, it's a mystery to those of us in Congress. If you just look at their own math and their own assumptions, it just doesn't make common sense. If a farmer from southern Minnesota were to score it, it would be much different. And so, I mean, at some point we have to acknowledge that, all right, we get what you're doing there, but you're an unelected bureaucrat that is, you know, making assumptions that aren't based on the reality that we see every day in farm country. So, whatever tools are necessary for us to keep moving the farm bill on, I think we have to do it. But regardless of that, the CBO score and what the background, you know, government gunk is happening, we need the Senate to move. We need the Senate to put something on paper. We need to see a bill. Right now, their framework and their ideas are simply written on the back of a bar napkin. And I think we owe it to the American public and the American farmer to say, show us your bill so we can negotiate in good faith and get to a finish line on the farm bill.
Wonderful. Representative Finstad, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion. But first, our Andrew Hunneke has more on countries around the world that supply the U.S. with the most agricultural imports in this week's Map It Out.
American agricultural imports are estimated at $202.5 billion for fiscal year 2024 due to higher projected imports on horticultural, livestock, and dairy products. This map shows the top 10 areas across the world where the U.S. is importing agricultural goods. According to USDA, the top three are Mexico, Canada, and the European Union. Mexico is currently forecast at nearly $48 billion, Canada at $41 billion, and the European Union at $34 billion. Brazil is fourth with nearly $7 billion, and China and Australia are tied with nearly $5 billion each. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together, we celebrate together, but we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where this week's panel will focus on how the upcoming election will shape ag policy. We're joined this week by Chandler Gould with the National Wheat Growers Association and Tom Sell with Combes, Sell & Associates. Tom, I want to start with you first. Both Harris and Trump added vice presidential candidates with rural backgrounds to their tickets. What agriculture issues do you see each campaign focusing on?
Certainly, I think in the Trump administration, you're going to see a lot of the rhetoric around kind of the America first. We need to stand by our domestic industries, and that certainly includes agriculture. Both Trump from his previous four-year term and J.D. Vance, even in the news programs this past Sunday, talked about how blessed our nation is by its network of family farms and ranches that keep us well supplied in food and fiber, feed and clothe the world, lead the way in terms of technology development. I think both administrations, and certainly Walz, from his history on the Ag Committee, and with the history of the Trump administration, even J.D. Vance in the Senate, I think both campaigns are going to be very upfront about the fact that they want to stand by and support our nation's farmers, and certainly we're grateful for that. But there's a lot of details within that about how that's going to work.
Chandler, why would a Harris administration be better for agriculture than a second Trump administration?
Well, you know, I think whether it's a Harris-Walz administration or a Trump administration, we need to make sure that whoever is elected is focused on what our farmers and ranchers need, and making sure that we have implemented a farm bill that's got a reactive and realistic safety net in it, and that we maintain a lot of those programs out in rural America, whether it's continuing to expand broadband or make sure we've got crop insurance, and that we have the USDA in a position that can help whether we have droughts or other issues that come up in those time periods. But, you know, as Tom just commented, I think that it's great that Vice President Harris has picked Governor Walz as her running mate. He served on the House Agriculture Committee at the same time I was a subcommittee staff director. So I had the opportunity to work directly with the governor. And then, of course, if you just look at Governor Walz's old Minnesota district, Minnesota 1, the southern part of Minnesota down there, it neighbored Chairman Colin Peterson's district, who I worked for. And so his district was, I believe, number one in pork, number one or two in turkey. It was way up there with corn and soy, and had dairy in there as well. So knowing what it takes to keep those type of operations vibrant, and also the need for export markets for each of those commodities, I think will be a help if the Harris-Walz wins the election and moves into the administration.
Turning now to the party platforms, the agriculture section in the Democratic platform calls for promoting labor organizing rights, requiring overtime pay, and boosting worker protections. And Republicans would say that these restrictions would make the ag labor shortage even worse. Are they wrong?
When you really look at the ag labor issues, it's more of how do we make the H-2A and H-2B programs more seamless and easier to use. When you're looking like in the specialty crop industry or the dairy industry that has a high demand for predominantly immigrant labor is what they're dependent on. And so making sure that we make that system easier to get those workers in this country, make sure they're here legally and documented and where it's not as big of a burden as the H-2A program has been in the past. And the problem with ag labor is it always gets tied up in the larger labor discussion and the whole immigration and the border discussion. And really, ag really needs its own carve out to fix those two programs to make sure that we have the necessary labor for a very intense industry of farming and ranching.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. The GOP platform calls for imposing tariffs on imported goods, and former President Trump seemed to suggest those tariffs could go as high as 20%. We asked Tom Sell if farm groups are wrong to be concerned about this leading to another trade war.
In agriculture, we've always pursued, and for good reason, more of a free trade platform. With that said, a lot of our foreign competitors, and oftentimes one of the sad realities is, our American farm families are not just competing in a very difficult market here domestically, but oftentimes they're competing against foreign governments. And it's one thing to pursue a free trade agenda, and it's another thing to just kind of have a very altruistic approach and allow your competitors to kind of walk all over you. Obviously, we've seen a taste of this in the previous administration with Trump. And there were tariffs imposed. Obviously, a lot of those have been maintained. But I don't think there was a real, you know, when you look at that ag economy during the Trump administration, it was growing, and our exports were growing even during that time. The value of those exports were growing at an incredible pace. You know, we had this ramp up over those 4 years where we were really increasing sales. And so kind of the reality of those 4 years, I think in rural America doesn't really compute with a real concern. At the same time, we want to pursue a free trade agenda, but we also want people to play by the rules. And that's a really important point, particularly in agriculture, where every nation wants to secure their own food supply. It's a national security issue. It's an economic issue. It's just like what we talk about here in the U.S. And so that world market just tends to be very distorted.
Kind of adding to that conversation, are you confident that a new Trump administration would compensate farmers for the impact of a trade war?
Well, hopefully you get exports going again in a significant way and prices come up. And you don't have to put out the federal assistance. However, certainly President Trump made it clear that that where farmer and farm and ranch families are off in the tip of the spear when we get into trade wars, that he was going to stand by our nation's family farmers. And, you know, whether it was MFP, CFAP, as we got into the COVID problem during the Trump administration, you know, they were very generous toward America's farm families to say, look, we know you always, even in the best of circumstances, have to face great uncertainties in your business. And now we've added upon that because of these bigger picture challenges. And so I'm going to stand by you. That's one of the problems we face in rural America right now is just as prices are really sliding and declining, you know, it's really getting to be a pretty ugly picture in rural America. At the same time that's happening, our level of federal assistance for farmers through FAR programs, which have not been updated yet, but we don't have a farm bill yet, but they're just really cranking down and drying up. The Biden administration, Secretary Vilsack, has kind of said, look, things are pretty good. We've had 3 years of record net farm income, but you know, that farm income is sliding because of lower commodity prices. And at the same time, the level of assistance provided by an outdated farm bill and with no real action out of the CCC to stand by our farmers, it's really creating a cash flow crisis.
Chandler, turning to you, looking ahead to the Democratic National Convention this week, what should the agriculture sector be listening to?
Just as Tom said, you know, I think the continued emphasis on climate solutions and agriculture being a major player in those will continue to be a theme that we hear there. But then also, I think you'll definitely hear the need for us to finish the 2024 Farm Bill. You know, I was with Chairman G.T. Thompson just last week, and I know he is still very eager to get that bill moved across the House floor and then, of course, over to the Senate chambers. I mean, it's critical that we do get a farm bill done this year. NOG will be actually flying in growers September 9th to the 11th to be up on the Hill. And so I think you will hear a lot of that at the DNC of how can we be a solution to some of the climate problems? What do we need to, as a backstop legislatively to help farmers and ranchers and to continue to support rural America? And then moving beyond that, like I said a little earlier, I'm hoping that we also hear, you know, a little more on things where the out the EPA, whether it's what they're going to continue to do on mitigating the Endangered Species Act, Prop 12. There's a lot of other things that are still going on, not only in D.C., but in many of our states that are affecting our growers that need reasonable solutions so we can continue to provide, you know, the safest and most affordable food supply to our U.S. customers and our international partners.
Wonderful. Well, Chandler and Tom, thank you both so much for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, our Andrew Hunneke has more on the decline of Chapter 12 farm bankruptcies in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
New data from the American Farm Bureau Federation shows Chapter 12 farm bankruptcies continue to decrease on a yearly basis. This type of bankruptcy became permanent law in 2005 and allows family farmers to keep operating while paying off their debt over a period of time. This chart shows the number of Chapter 12 bankruptcies between 2014 and 2023. The numbers peaked in 2019 with 599 filings. There were 139 filings last year, which is down 77% from that peak in 2019. The areas of the country with the most filings every year were in the Midwest and the Southeast. It is important to note that some farms are still struggling despite the fact these bankruptcy numbers are down. According to the latest Census of Agriculture, the country lost more than 140,000 farms between 2017 and 2022. Also, the most recent numbers from USDA show net farm income is expected to decrease by nearly $40 billion from last year. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Congress will still be in August recess. My colleague Steve Davies and I will be in Chicago covering the Democratic National Convention next week. We'll bring you a special edition of Newsmakers from the event. And Noah Wicks will be at Dakota Fest meeting with ag leaders. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at agripulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is agripulse.com.